Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
Friday, we are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We'll be here until noon with a whole bunch to talk about. Bruce Levine of The Score, who was on the season ticket holders call for the Cubs with Tom Ricketts yesterday. He's going to join us, fill us in as to what's going on there at 9:40. We're also going to get you set for the Last Dance finale that's coming up Sunday night. On Monday, for our Bulls Monday, Will Perdue is going to be back in, and we're going to talk about everything that we see, but I'm going to bring back some of the principals from the documentary with whom we've had conversations this week. Dr. Todd Boyd, who is just phenomenal, and the director of The Last Dance, Jason Hayer. If you missed that interview, we'll replay that for you at 11 midday, midway at 10:40. Have a special guest in the final segment as well because of a big fundraiser, of which The Score is a partner. That's all going on tomorrow. We're going to let you know every bit of it and keep you updated as to this whole mess right now in baseball. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR, The Score. You email us at Bernstein@670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live because we're streaming at 670thescore.com. You want to text? Text. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein670. My personal Twitter, if you want to follow there, you can. It's at Dan_Bernstein. Also, download the radio.com app, and that way you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. Ray Diaz, he is the executioner. He is on the board doing the things that he does. You know, it was so inevitable that even as baseball is trying to wrap itself in this idea of its business as public servant, that they really want to cloak everything that they're doing, not because they want to reopen any revenue spigots for themselves from the TV deals. No. It's all a public service. They're all doing it for you, for me. This is all for us. It just so happens that they might be salvaging some of their revenue. That's just only part and parcel of the fact that they're doing this out of sheer altruism. They're bringing baseball back just because people want it so badly, and that's just how much they care. But leave it to baseball because of how they have to miscalculate some things. And they've dribbled this down their leg from a public relations perspective because it's already turned sour. The whole thing has turned sour because of how they decided from the first moments, when they first started talking about this, everything was done publicly. Whether it was Bob Nightingale, Ken Rosenthal, or Jeff Passan, that whoever's talking to Rob Manfred and or the owners who sit on the various committees or anyone else in that league office, anytime you saw something, one of these trial balloons that would come out, baseball expects this, baseball finalizing plans for that. This has been going on for weeks now, and it has been from one of their favored conduits here. Jeff Passan, of ESPN, Bob Nightingale of USA Today, or Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. And they make sure that they sort of put these out, and then they see how people react, and then they pull it back, and they say, well, no. This was just in the first stages. It's just early on. These are just talks. There's nothing official. And as this thing has gotten more and more official, we get more and more information that leaks out, and then the players react to it. It's really crazy that they apparently lacked a fundamental understanding of something. And that is that anything that gets said in this sports news vacuum is going to be magnified. That it's going to be the news itself. There are no games going on. There are no games going on of any kind. So for them to not have properly understood the power of some of these stories, whether it's overnight and then first thing the next morning and then the players are going to react, and then what the players say while they're playing video games in what would otherwise be casual conversations, that ends up becoming a news story. If they didn't understand that and they didn't know where this thing could go, it's an unfortunate miscalculation. Because what it does now is it means more than ever they actually need the games. Because remember, there's going to be a delay. There's going to be 3 weeks of another spring training, and I don't even know how that's going to be covered. So if they're trying to figure out news cycles here and try to figure out what people are going to be talking about, obviously, we're going to see who got fat, who's coming back from an injury, where are those timetables, who's needs extra time to get back in shape for whatever reason because of anything that's happened in this period of time. So there's going to be, even if and when the agreement is reached, it's not like they can flip a switch and all of a sudden the games are on. So it's just too bad. It's too bad that baseball has by choices of their own of how they've handled it, instead of doing this behind closed doors. I'm grateful for the content. Don't get me wrong. I'm grateful for the content. But instead of doing this behind closed doors and just trying to handle their business and then roll it out and say, hey, baseball's back, we've got this done, we've had to watch it all happen behind the scenes with really no agreement in sight. And now that everybody is trying to play the public relations game. And it's when I'm nodding my head along with Trevor Bauer, you know something's weird, because he's an odd duck, man, and he's brilliant. Trevor Bauer is clearly brilliant. Not the nicest guy in the world, doesn't have all the friends in the world, doesn't seem to care, and he carries himself very, very differently, but he is really smart. And if you missed it on Twitter, he did a good job yesterday. Last night, of trying to explain the player's position when it comes to the okey-doke that the owners are apparently trying to pull on them. And that's why there's been a formal request for documents in a way that's usually at the initial stages of major collective bargaining negotiation. You know, show us your books, show us your books, show us your books. So we're going to get to that in a little bit, because that's sort of underpinning this. But here's the analogy, just to put it into basic terms of what the players are pushing back against right now. So Bauer writes, let's say you're a painter, okay? A client who's renovating apartments says he'll pay you $100,000 this year for your painting services. You agree. You sign the contract. You expect to be paid $100,000. The client then experiences a fire and they lose half of their apartments. It's not your fault. It's not the client's fault either. So you mutually agree that you'll accept $50,000 instead of $100,000 as a show of good faith. A new contract is signed. Then the client realizes they won't be able to rent as many of their apartments as they originally thought. So they propose that instead of paying you $50,000, they'll pay you half of their rental income. You have no idea how much their rental income is, and they won't disclose it. The question then becomes, is it your fault as the painter that the client can't rent his property? You've done the same work, even worked with the client to reflect doing less overall work. Is it fair for the client to now want you, as the painter, to share the burden of not being able to rent the apartments? Are your services worth less because the client can't rent the apartments? And that's an interesting way of framing it. Obviously, that doesn't take into account insurance and whether or not there's some sort of force majeure indemnification that would prevent the owner of the apartments from collecting some of the insurance payments, but that's overcomplicating things for the purposes of this. Where I don't find the owners believable is when they said that their initial offer to the players of the 50% salary reduction that was immediately accepted, they're now claiming that they made that offer assuming the resumption of games would have fans in the stands. I call BS on that. I think that is an underhanded and mealy-mouthed way of trying to back out of a deal and say, well, now we were going to centralize our revenues, but we want to socialize our losses. And they figured out a better plan, and they didn't figure it out soon enough for them, a better plan for them. But they didn't think of it soon enough, so they had to come up with this idea that, wait a second, that earlier deal, that was based on fans in the seats. Come on. There isn't anybody back then that thought that that was going to be possible, even if you gave them the benefit of the doubt that there would be baseball of some kind. And this is, of course, typical. The 217 says, comparing a multimillionaire to a painter is what's wrong with this whole damn thing. No, that's not what's wrong with anything. And it's a perfectly reasonable comparison. The whole point of comparing them to a painter and what they charge for their services is to make it more understandable. There's nothing wrong with that at all. If that bothers you, you've got you issues. Let's get to what Trevor Bauer said also, because I think we need to hear him also in his own words as a way of understanding where they're coming from on some of this stuff. Trevor Bauer and MLB agent Rachel Luba were speaking, and this is from Trevor Bauer's YouTube page. So let's hear this explanation from him.
One of the main ones that I thought about for this is a lot of the owners own the parking structures around the stadium, the restaurants around the stadium, a lot of infrastructure around the stadium. So people coming to the stadium, players, fans, even if there aren't any fans, just the fact that there's baseball, it creates excitement around that area. Now those businesses make more money. So by us taking the risk of going and playing, their other businesses are going to be boosted and make more money. So let's say in a season that you do have fans, ticket prices are now $10 less. But parking is $10 more. Now you just shift. You're making the same amount of money because you own the parking garages. But now the revenue of the baseball is now not counted.
But you don't have fans that are going to...
Well, I'm saying if there were fans at a certain point in the season, yeah. You know, to get people out, we understand that, you know, it's been a really tough time for everybody and we want to make ticket prices way less to give you some cheap entertainment. But they jack up the parking prices. Now, it's like the revenue's down, so they pay players less, but they're still making... That's just one easy way that I can think of to a practical example that they could move money around. And that's why we've never had a 50-50 revenue split, because there's so many ways to hide the money. And also, MLB's always been a closed book. They don't release their...
Yeah.
Which is financials.
And so we'll get so many people that are going to tell us, well, hockey does it and, you know, other sports. And first of all, I think hockey is the only one that does like a true 50-50 split. The rest, it's, you know, it's different. But
the other two leagues, the NFL and NBA, have an actual salary cap.
But let's be clear that those are negotiated by their unions and the leagues. And, you know, they come to that agreement through, you know, negotiations.
So
and a full understanding. And there's the books are released, right? We understand how the revenue. We have no idea because baseball is the only sport that doesn't release any of that. And it's closed. Mm-hmm. We have an idea, but that's it. So to just, you know, now all of a sudden ask and assume that, you know, it should be just like, you know, I mean, if other sports do it, baseball should too. I mean, I think that's a silly kind of way to jump to a conclusion.
It's never been done in baseball. It's not collectively bargained. It would just be for this season. There's no... It doesn't sit well with me. Because the other... Slightly lighthearted, but if I'm going to have to trust my salary to Rob Manfred marketing the game to make more money for the game, I am out on that.
You're better off...
Let me market the game, then we'll make more money.
Make a lot more money.
That's a critical comment there from Trevor Bauer. That if there's this 50-50 revenue split, he's then trusting that it's going to be Rob Manfred doing the marketing. Now, I want you to remember something. Don't you remember at the All-Star game a couple of years ago when Rob Manfred was asked about why somebody as galactically spectacular as Mike Trout is at baseball, probably the best baseball player ever, that's ever walked the face of the earth, and why so many people don't know who he is? Do you remember what Rob Manfred said? He shifted it to the responsibility to Mike Trout himself. And he said it depends on what marketing opportunities he wants, essentially how he puts himself out there, and not every player is the same. And he essentially blamed Mike Trout for not marketing himself enough. And now he's telling the players, oh, trust me, I'll grow the game, I'll market the game, we're all in this together. No, 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 not you. Not you, Rob Manfred. This is not the same guy that basically said, well, that's on Mike Trout. He's not popular. He's not famous. I mean, it's so backwards. And this is what happens when your commissioner is your former labor negotiator attack dog, who is so predisposed to seeing players rather than partners, rather than business partners, being seen as an adverse party. Always and forever, by their nature, somehow an adverse party, a group, oh, you just have to pay. And that if you have to keep looking at them as an expense. And that's the difference. That's the difference in trust between the NBA and between the MLB, where you've just got that naturally baked in. And all Trevor Bauer is saying is, look, if you pay me my salary, then marketing becomes my responsibility, and I can handle that, because I'm not here working on some revenue shift where you're able to play a shell game and show that some things, that money that you're making is not quote unquote baseball revenue. That's why you don't do some of these revenue deals, and especially when they're not collectively bargained, because that's how you make sure that the money doesn't get hidden as you negotiate what constitutes sport revenue as opposed to business revenue. Because it's really easy to make something look like something else. And they know it, and the smart players know it, and that's why they're not going to agree to this. It's just unfortunate that baseball has put this out there, created this kind of conflict, and then in a news vacuum seems to have miscalculated. And if they thought that they were just going to push the players on this, if their calculation was, look, all these things the players say are going to make them look bad, I don't think it's necessarily true. It can be easy to demonize players because some people just don't like players or resent them for making money because they're good at baseball. But I'm not on my watch. I think it's too easy to do that. I think it's too easy to carry water for owners. And if Tom Ricketts wants to say that 70% of their revenue comes from day of game, I would like to see that data. I would like to see that. Because I was always under the impression that that was meaning less and less over time with the deals with Baseball Advance Media, with what their various and sundry television and radio deals had been doing for them, and all the other ways that they had found to market their game. Everything else they've been doing, and all of the Cubs businesses that surround the park, that it wasn't necessarily just what was happening in that building that was made. 70% sounds awfully high to me. I don't doubt that it's a significant percentage, but other teams had talked about how the actual game attendance had affected their bottom line much less than it had in the past. So I would love to see the numbers that he adds up to get to 70%. When we come back, I want you to hear from Scott Boras, the agent of some fame and notoriety, was on WFAN talking about what's going on. And then Bruce Levine will give us some Cubs-specific stuff coming up at 9:40. I'm Dan Bernstein, 312-644-6767. We are live and local on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
What did Snell say on his stream earlier, do you know?
That he said it's not worth it to play with pay cuts, and that he, like, you guys are risking your lives getting, like, obviously getting COVID.
Yeah, I love Snell. That's my guy, bro.
He said if someone gets it, they got to live with that for the rest of their lives.
He ain't lying. He's right.
He's like, I need my... He's like, give me my money or I'm not playing.
Hey, bro, he's speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Somebody's got to say it. At least he manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snow, man. This guy's a beast, too. One of the best lefties in the game, bro.
That was Bryce Harper having Blake Snell's back, and I could tell by the sound he was harvesting materials with his pickaxe. I couldn't see it, but it sounded like he was gathering mats, as they say, so he could build. And then he marked something, too. You could hear the marker sound effect in there. That was during his Fortnite game. So players are trying to stand together, and what they say matters in something like this. But remember, this isn't a normal labor negotiation. This isn't, we want more money, or you have too much money, or the owner's saying you guys got too much money. This isn't one of these things where we're just watching a spitball fight over money, because there's a safety aspect to this that is unprecedented in these unprecedented times. So it does matter what they say. It matters because also, as mentioned, the news vacuum. Everything's going to be magnified more because there's nothing else going on in sports. You also heard Phillies pitcher Bryson Stott in there, too. Scott Boras, the agent of repute, was on WFAN yesterday. He was on the Joe and Evan show. And he was asked what he thinks about this proposal from the owners that would require a 50-50 revenue split with the MLBPA.
The one thing that we know about baseball is that we've operated from the union leadership and the players for generations have operated on a no salary cap dynamic. Salaried employees and baseball players are among them, and ownership are two different worlds. I mean, baseball is really successful. They've done some really, really good work. Randy Levine, for example, in New York is just a brilliant businessman and has operated the business side of the Yankees very successfully. And you see a franchise grow to, being worth billions and billions more than it was worth, a decade ago. You see the Oakland A's, they're bought for $180 million and they're worth $1.1 billion. You see the Atlanta Braves where they were purchased for $450 million, and now they're worth $1.8 billion. They made $262 million in 2016, and in 2019, that's public record, they made $476 million, $200 million in increase. And you don't see anybody talking about sharing the gains that all the billions of dollars that have been brought to the game. And they shouldn't, because they're the owners. It's what owners do. So you don't privatize the gains and socialize the losses. And when we're in these kind of environments where there's a difficulty that is a restraint, an issue, that is something that ownership takes the good and the bad with gains and losses, and that's really how ownership works. But in this case, the one thing about the employees, they've already made a major concession by making sure that baseball is economically feasible because they're only paying the players if they play.
Scott, you're a smart guy. You know it's coming. You know that they're going to try to pull this, and the players are going to say no. They're going to give a lot of the reasons you gave. Then what happens? I mean, do you think this is going to become an ugly, ugly fight once the owners do it and say, we want revenue sharing, and Tony Clark says, not going to happen? What happens next?
I think that the union leadership has really done a good job of getting the voice of the players. And I know the players I represent have been very active in communicating with them. And I think they clearly understand when they made that agreement, that was a major concession. Because you're talking about 162 games of $4.5 billion in players' salaries. And they said, look, we're going to work with you in this process. And the players' integrity was that we're going to reach an agreement, and we're going to stand by that agreement, and we're going to honor that agreement. And I think, Tony has said publicly that, look, we made an agreement, and we're going to honor the agreement, but we're not going to alter the agreement because we just freshly did this agreement. And I think the players stand behind Tony Clark. I think they stand behind the union and what they had to say about this, and I think it's appropriate because of the fact that why did the party sign it? And again, the conditions of the virus were much more unknown and much, more. They knew that they were going to be playing games without fans. They knew it. And there's an economic feasibility aspect of this that can be examined and looked at, and that's fine. But I think you're going to find that with the media rights contracts and all the other things, it's going to be very difficult to suggest that owners are far better off playing than they are not playing. And because there's going to be a much different world, because there'll be rejecting billions of dollars in media contracts is something that I think is not in the best interest of owners, players, fans, or anyone else.
Talking to Scott Boras, of course, the great baseball agent. If a guy you represented came to you, if they let's assume that they're going to play the games, one of the players that you represent comes to you and says, "Look, Scott, I just don't feel comfortable playing. I really don't. I'm concerned for my family. I understand maybe I'm not going to get paid this year, but I just don't feel comfortable doing it." What would you say to that guy?
I would certainly believe that this is based upon absolute medical evidence, and that if he's been given that advice, that each player should make his individual decision. These contracts are employment contracts. They're not servitudes. And so if it's something that's detrimental to the well-being of his personal health and such, that the reality of it is that these are things that need to be looked at, and you need to consult with your medical health professionals, your team doctors, to any medical information you can receive, and make each player should make an individual decision about what's best for him, because as we know, all players are not similarly situated in this problem when you go to examine their individual health and what impact this virus may have upon them.
From what you've heard, are you comfortable with kind of the safety around all of this about restarting the year, the amount of testing, what the plan would be, trying to limit travel? Is that something you are comfortable with from what you've heard?
You know, I think everyone in baseball, owners, MLB, the union, you know, I myself, you know, I have a medical background. I study pharmacology, and I've talked to over 40 doctors, Korea, Russia, Japan, Taiwan, trying to do the best I can to give the players the information that they need to examine playing environments. We've had testing done by Stanford and USC of kind of the baseball community, some administration, some players. And the thing we're learning is that the isolation part of a working environment really helps, because few, if any, of that group tested positive, less than 1%, in fact. But so the reality of it is, the age group and for the players and for everything, the overall general medical information is very positive for that age group. And with first-class physical condition and few underlying medical conditions. But we still have to evaluate each player individually. We know that from the early test that isolation of being in a work environment is, and when you go into the real world, you go to the grocery store, and, you know, when you're, I'm a farm boy, and I know when they pick the vegetable and they put it in the crate and they take it to the truck and then they take it to the warehouse and they unload it and they reload it and they take it to the grocery store and they unload it and then they stock it and then you have the cashier. You're talking about 8 or 9 people that are untested and buying your products every time you go to the grocery store. So in an isolated environment, players where they have medical care, they have an environment, they have their food monitored, you have a lot of things about their working environment that is very different than the general population. And so those dynamics really help in making an assessment of safety and health. And I think most of the players that, you know, I should say all the players that I represent, I have not had any that have come to me and after reviewing all the information, that they obviously understand that this virus is here and it's going to be a bit, certainly it's not going away, but they're looking at the dynamics of this, and they understand that there's a risk, but they also understand that looking at their particular circumstances and stuff, that they're an employee base that bears a very, very low risk and a very strong chance of sustaining And we haven't had any players in baseball in operation around the world that have been hospitalized. So we've got some good models to work off of that tells us more and more information for decision making.
That's Scott Boras on the Joe and Evan show. I don't know which is Joe and which is Evan, but the one guy couldn't sound more like he was from WFAN. Hey, it's Alvy Singer. Alvy Singer, am I right? Am I right? And that's awesome. That's just perfect. I love that. Hey, Scott. Well, another thing. It's when Boras starts talking about the players' likelihoods of getting sick and everything they're doing to protect them, I do hope there's also this awareness that it's not necessarily about them and their individual health and their likelihood of dying. It's everybody else with whom they're in contact, and the concern should be about baseball as potential vector too, and with their families and everybody with whom they come in contact on a regular basis, there is more opportunity for increased exposure. It's not necessarily the science, and he's done this in the past when we've heard from Scott Boras. I was talking about the likelihoods that they themselves might get sick or die. This is a public health issue, and everybody's in it together. You don't wear a mask to protect you. I wear a mask to protect you, and you wear a mask to protect me. And please wear it over your nose also. I counted 11 people yesterday, 11 in the grocery store and parking lot, 11 wearing their mask over their mouth, but not their nose. If you're not wearing your mask over your nose, you are not wearing a mask. I hope that's clear. Bruce Levine was on the conference call that Cubs owner Tom Ricketts had with season ticket holders, and he can tell us what the Cubs are saying publicly about their business and what they are telling most important people. Obviously, the companies are the most important people, but they're season ticket holders too. What they are telling fans about where they stand, the nature of their business, and what they think is going to happen going forward. We will get the latest on the Cubs from Bruce next on The Score.
While you're doing your part in staying at home, count on The Score to stay informed, stay connected, and stay entertained.
Chris in Gage Park is on The Score. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for keeping me entertained while I work at home.
We're trying.
Tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score and listen to The Score from home. We are Chicago's number one sports station, 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think right now players are just trying to talk to each other. Reps are trying to get a feel for where guys are at on different issues, and so that we can all kind of have one voice here as we start to make some decisions about actual actionable details in some of these proposals.
That was Ian Happ yesterday. He joins us Thursdays at 11 to talk baseball and life and things, and his podcast that he's doing with Zach Short, Dakota Mekas, and Nico Horner at their house, The Compound, there in Arizona. So, yeah, we don't know how concrete any of these negotiations are, because right now everything is being handled, unfortunately, through the media and comments on Twitch streams and in Twitter feeds. So at some point, this is going to get real and hashed out, but they've already lost their opportunity to do it behind closed doors. The Cubs were talking to fans, Tom Ricketts specifically, and Bruce Levine got to hear everything that the Cubs owner had to say about their current situation. Bruce Levine is on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Bruce. How you doing, man?
Hi, Dan. Doing well. Hopefully you are, and yours as well. And yes, indeed, Tom Ricketts had a session with the season ticket holders last night. The session included President of Business Operations, Crane Kenny, as well as a couple other top officials of the Cubs to talk about the plans and bringing back baseball safely to Chicago.
So what was plausible in what they were saying? I heard the number 70% when he came out and said that was the amount of revenue they get from game day operations. I would need to see that data, because that sounds exaggerated to me.
Right. But, I mean, at some point when they sit down and they negotiate this, Dan, with the players, That is exactly what the Players Association is trying to determine right now when they ask for a 50-50 revenue split on what revenues they gain in 2020. So the books have never been open totally to players. The players have never seen the necessity for it because they're doing quite well in the system that they have here. But nonetheless, if they want them to take a revenue split now, that's what the players want to see. They want to see those open books. They want to see a proof of what Tom said about 70% of the Chicago Cubs revenue coming from game day operations and 30% coming from media deals that he has with local and national media companies.
What was the tone? I mean, it's one thing to know the information, mm-hmm. but what did it seem like the purpose of the call was? What were they trying to get accomplished in the call?
I just think being very informational and matter of fact, there was no gloating. There wasn't politicking, I don't think, except other than explaining the 70% from game day operations and how there won't be fans in the stands. So from that perspective, that might have been a little bit of the politics of it. But the rest was just trying to calm people and make them understand that safety and the medical and the science are the number one thing that they're concerned with for the players and eventual fans to come back to Wrigley Field. So they spent an inordinate amount of time talking about safety and the political partnership they have with the mayor and the governor to get this done correctly. They've switched the people who are in charge of the drug policy in the minor leagues around to being in charge of the medical policy for them going ahead. So they're using those people, that have normally been around to do drug testing on players to now be a part of a medical team that can do testing sometimes twice a week for players so that they're deemed healthy and the tests are repeated to make sure that everybody else is healthy and feeling good about moving forward with this medically. Because as we know, the medicine and the science, they're the most important thing. You know, you start this up and people get sick. How do you isolate them? How do you not shut the sport down again? These are the essentials of going forward. And then that bleeds, Dan, into the economics of what they can offer. To the owners, offering a 50% revenue share is the only thing that makes sense, because if you start and in 6 weeks or 8 weeks you have to stop, you can't afford to pay those players if you don't have the rest of those revenues coming in. So that's the case that the owners will make to the players when they sit down and negotiate the economics of the game.
See, I think there would be some contingency in there for a full stoppage. Obviously, the players wouldn't necessarily say, if there's no baseball, we're going to still collect X percentage of our actual salaries. I think the worry, and it's a completely reasonable worry, if I'm Tony Clark, that this is they're not going to come off of this. Once you get things socialized, that's over. You have given that up. I think that this is a line in the sand where they have not had to engage in any sort of revenue split sharing, loss split sharing before. And I just think it's a bridge too far where this is opportunistically, the owners are looking at this to take advantage of a unique circumstance and a crisis to grab something they'll never relinquish.
Yeah, you know, I can't agree with you, because the owners have already paid out $170 million to the players for April and May. And where from what revenue stream is that coming from? There is no revenue stream. So to say that, it's politicized, I don't disagree that down the line is a part of this that they can hold on to and say, well, you guys accept a revenue sharing in 2020 under unique circumstances. This is the way that we have to go forward, just like the NBA and the NHL and NFL go about their business. So we've already set the precedent, and as you said, Dan, quite accurately, you planted that seed out there, you politicized it, and now that's not going to go away. And I agree with you on that. As far as the economics of 2020, I think that they're probably being pretty honest about the fact that they're only going to have as much revenue as they have games, so they have to move forward in that fashion.
I think the only way we can know is by actually seeing the books. And there was a request apparently that went in officially for some documentation. Mm-hmm. And part of it, the players should be predisposed to not believe the owners when the owners won't disclose anything. So the only way to do this is to actually be honest, actually show them the numbers, show them the documentation, and say this. And instead of having to believe them, just share the data. You know, there's an easy way to be believed.
The players are doing quite well, wouldn't you say?
In general, but it isn't a question of how well they're doing. It's a question of it's billionaires and millionaires. There's still labor.
Yeah, my point is that they've had 25 years of no labor work stoppage. And I think the players have been satisfied with their percentages of what's going on. Now, under extreme circumstances, they want to make sure that there's no hidden revenues. And there is sure to be pushback by the owners, because at the end of the day, you know, the players are both the worker and the asset. And with being an asset, all of their salaries can be written off 40% at the end of any fiscal year. So there's a great gain back from that, because they are not only a worker, but they're also the product that is diminishing as it moves on and it is able to be written off. So they will find areas where owners make more money. It just depends on at what point do they cut bait and say, this is what we need to accept, or we're not going to have a season.
That's a fascinating point about them being both asset, you know, with a diminishing asset that could be written off. If they go to a revenue split, when they essentially become co-owners, does that provision evaporate?
Yeah, I mean that's a great question. I know you have some really bright lawyers in your family, so I'm sure that answer can be established within one tweet. Or not one labor text, rather. No, that's true. So, you know, again, and I asked that question, too, when I saw Snell's reply yesterday about, hey, I'm not going to play if you cut me 33% and 25%. I'm down to maybe only making $1 million this year, so I'm not playing. So he's in the middle of a five-year contract, right? So if there is work out there and he refuses to play, you can also ask the labor lawyers whether or not that contract has been breached, and that contract's over with for the next 4 years if he refuses to report and do his job. So there's a lot of interesting scenarios that go along with all of this. Fact remains is I don't know how much fan bases have a stomach for any of this other than getting their game back.
There's another piece of news yesterday where Crane Kenny mentioned for the first time some fairly strong optimism that the marquee network deal for coverage with Comcast was getting close and would then be, did he use the word imminent? Because that's the first time we'd heard that there were those kinds of progressive steps made in negotiation.
Confident that it will get done as soon as baseball is back. And that is, my word was imminent, because that's what he said during this conference, that very confident in the fact that they were very close. They thought maybe within days of getting this deal done back in March when baseball stopped. Therefore, Comcast had no need to step further at that point, because they didn't just want the programming that Marquee offers on a nightly basis. They wanted the games. So Crane and the people with the Cubs are confident that this will get done as soon as there's baseball to offer on the Marquee Network.
Before we let you go, Bruce, in the discussion regarding the significance of the game day revenue, for years, I was under the impression that actual butts in seats had been mattering less and less and less and less because of all the other ancillary deals, media deals, and specifically what's been going on with baseball advanced media and everything that has been done virtually with the game and to grow the game and the way the game was being consumed. So this comes at an interesting time where the trends had been going in another direction, and now we have the owners telling us just how vitally important all of the people in the building are. How do they square that with the actual reality of where they're going to be next year, the year after that, the year after that? We may never see 43,000 fans, shoulder to shoulder, unless there is some sort of really successful vaccine relatively soon.
You're 100% right, Dan. And when you look at the Cubs, they have one of the highest ticket prices in baseball. That's going along with the per cap, which is the amount of money that they ascertain through selling food, merchandise, parking, all the residuals of the ballpark. It's a huge number for the big market teams. So keep your eye, Dan, on the top 10 teams that fill the ballpark and make their money that way. Those are the teams that are going to get hurt the most during this time where they're talking about revenue splits and less revenue coming in. The smaller market teams like Tampa or Cleveland, who don't put that many people into the seats and have their payrolls and all their expenses figured out by paying through their media, the media companies that they do business with, and how those monies are split up. I think they're come out better than the big market teams from what is being projected out there.
Bruce, always appreciate it. Continued good health, and have a nice weekend.
You as well, Dan. Thanks.
That is Bruce Levine. I wish him a nice weekend. Really, he works more on the weekends than he does during weekdays, so it's probably backwards for him. Bruce Levine on Twitter at MLB. Bruce Levine, always keeping you apprised of the latest developments with the Chicago baseball teams and MLB.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.